The Tom Woods Show, episode 1810.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Well, we wrap up Anthony Samaroff week with an episode that's going to make a lot of people angry at me. But, you know, I got to be me, right? Got to do what you got to do. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about not particular conspiracies, but the kind of conspiracy mindset that some people have, that it's the center of their worldview. Now, the center of my worldview is liberty, libertarianism, non-aggression, the idea that society can run and order itself without some guy with a bullhorn issuing commands at everybody. That's the way I look at the world. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't believe that there are deeply sinister people in the world. I absolutely do. And that sometimes they do conspire with each other to do bad things. I don't see how you deny that. The Bolshevik Revolution itself was obviously a conspiracy. What else was that? It was obviously a conspiracy of a minority of people who did not have anything like massive support among the public. There was no support for the Bolsheviks whatsoever. So it's not the idea of conspiracies or considering the possibility of conspiracies in itself that is the problem. It's more that I think we all know what I'm talking about. There are some people you encounter for whom that's the whole story, is that there's a sinister group of people out there. There's a bunch of individuals who are doing some terrible things. And what we just need to do is expose them. And then the righteous people will restore their liberties. I wish that were the case. I wish that was what we were dealing with. A shadowy group of people, and the American public or the people around the world are just put upon by these malefactors. I wish it were as simple as that. Unfortunately, it is not. Anthony, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. 5 times in 1 week. That's crazy.
Where has the time gone? Here we are on Friday already of Anthony Samaroff week. Now for this one,
those must be the most beautiful words I've ever heard in the English language. Anthony Samaroff week. Oh, wonderful.
It's glorious, isn't it? You belong to an elite group, I'm telling you. Not many people have had this.
Just, they should make it a national holiday. Anthony Samaroff week. We can celebrate that every year.
I would support that. I would absolutely support that. But I would celebrate Anthony Samaroff week by working. Doing something productive, right? But for half the week. But the other half, you know, all work and no play, right? The other half of the week, I would vacation.
Okay. That
Both
sounds
in
good.
Honor of Anthony Samaroff. All right. Let's get into the somewhat unusual kind of topic we're going to hit on today. This has to do with a post that you wrote not too long ago that got me thinking and that I hope will get people thinking in productive ways. So why don't you take whatever time you need to spell out what your thoughts are, and then you and I will riff on that.
Yeah, I guess this became interesting to me again recently because we live in such strange times with the COVID lockdowns that, you know, we thought were only going to go on for a couple of months and, you know, seem to just go on forever. And those of us who've been trying to see reason on this issue, you know, you're tearing out your hair. It makes you think that there's some kind of like conspiracy going on. You know, it makes you more open to conspiracy theories. And even that word, like conspiracy theories, is just used really thrown around to discredit anything that people don't like. Because, I mean, of course, there are some real conspiracies. Even Michael Shermer from Skeptics magazine, who's obnoxiously skeptical of everything except for mainstream narratives. Well, I don't want to lampoon him that heavily, but let's say I find, you know, those Skeptic Society people tend to be quite selective in their skepticism. He said one of the reasons why people believe in conspiracies is that some of them are true. And that's a massive step forward from, I think, 10 or 20 years or in the 90s. I don't think you'd hear a skeptic say something like that. But what I kind of like to draw a distinction between conspiracy theories and what I call the big conspiracy or the global conspiracy, the grand narrative conspiracy, the grand global conspiracy. So conspiracies would be, there's individual things that, you know, stink, like, you know, Jeffrey Epstein is an obvious example. And some people might have heard of Operation Northwoods or Operation Gladio. If not, you can Google them. And then the grand global conspiracy is the idea that all of the conspiracies are somehow coordinated by some shadowy elite of families. And it's interesting because when I was growing up, I believed in the grand global conspiracy. In 2002, my brother and I went to see David Icke speak in England, and there was just a few hundred people in the audience. He wasn't so, you know, he wasn't filling stadiums back then. I spoke to him briefly, you know. I think back then, the only real alternative media that was available tended to be stuff like Alex Jones and things like that, that tried to at least, you know, the thing is on the news channel, everything happened in a vacuum. So when they were selling the war in Iraq, they say Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction potentially, or he's used them before to gas the Kurds. They never mentioned that who sold the weapons. They never showed the video of Donald Rumsfeld meeting with Saddam Hussein to shake his hand. You know, everything's just a snapshot. They never gave any context of what happened. But when you would go to the conspiracy theorists that believed in the grand global conspiracy, they would be putting the dots together. They'd be giving you historical context. They'd be giving you a rationale for believing that there was some kind of pattern behind what was going on. And they were definitely more informative and doing a better job of it than the mainstream news were. They would demystify the world. Now I'm skeptical about the global conspiracy, and I have been pretty much since started learning about economics and libertarianism. I mean, I have to say, if push came to shove, if someone exposed it and said, yeah, we've proven that the grand global conspiracy is real, I wouldn't be like shockingly surprised, you know? I wouldn't be floored by the revelation that 9/11 was an inside job. I just don't believe these things with a fervor because really when I started learning about economics, that also has a different demystifying power of explaining the world, because most of what I see could be explained by economic incentives. People don't want the negative consequences of their actions, so they outsource them using the state. They redistribute the product of productive activities, and they diffuse the results of their own irresponsible activities. Everyone likes free stuff and government wants power. So there's this kind of deal going on between the government and the people where they bribe people with free stuff. And, or as my friend Peter put it, there's more than enough demand for government interventions just based on economic incentives. As we touched upon in a previous podcast, all the public servants and school teachers and university professors, they're basically then bought off with public funds to be like allies of the government. Hans Hermann Hoppe said the university professors are like the court intellectuals who provided doctrines justifying the monarchy, like the divine right of kings. Or now we have university professors to come up with the social contract theory and all these things that, if you actually look closely at them, are nonsense. Then they keep a whole underclass of people on welfare. The purpose of welfare is not to abolish poverty. The most charitable rendering is it's there to alleviate poverty. But we, you know, if you understand economic incentives, you know that if you incentivize something, you tend to get more of it. But they're always going to be in support of the government because they're basically scared into it through fear of starvation. Once you have the centralized power, you also have the incentive for all the corporations to come in and lobby the government to get preferential legislation passed on their behalf. And then you've got all these other like international bodies like the World Bank, the WHO, the CDC, well, the CDC is American, but you know what I'm driving at, all these so-called, the IMF, all these so-called international organizations that people like to think are government, which they take government to mean working in the public interest, but these are actually working in favor of the corporations that buy them off. So sometimes libertarians, I think, can do a little bit too much apologetics for corporate power. I mean, I think I understand why that is. It's because we're trying to defend the principle of private property, which is like really important. And as you've said in podcasts before, like our ideological enemies on the left aren't necessarily making the distinction, or they don't make the distinction between money that's legitimately earned on a free market or wealth that's gained through corporate bribing of the government. They're not very good at making those distinctions. which I think is a fair criticism. I think the point I made at the end of my post, I'm sorry for pontificating at such length, is in one way I saw one of the appeals of the grand narrative conspiracy, the grand global conspiracy, is it's a comfort in a way to think that there's just a group of like evil people who, if we could just depose from power, the world would suddenly wake up. I mentioned this in the podcast we did a few days ago, that before I got into libertarianism, I thought, oh, the world's waking up. Look, they're protesting against the war. They're protesting against the Patriot Act. Oh, and then Ron Paul comes along. Look, they're looking for answers. Of course, this groundswelling disappeared as soon as Obama came into power. So they were constantly telling us that the world was just waking up to the way that they were being manipulated and controlled. So if that's true, you just need to get rid of the manipulators and the controllers. The real scary thought is it's not just a bunch of evil people in a room. The real scary thought is it's regular people who are relatively good, who are controlling you horizontally. You have a nice neighbor, but they don't think that you should be able to open up your business without a license, even if it's a hair salon. Your drinking buddies don't think, you know, they support stricter gun control. Your church mates don't think that gays should be allowed to get married. And then you've got another friend that says Soviet Russia wasn't real communism and that real communism has never been tried. You know, the people at your local group, whatever you do, theater, play golf or something like that, think you should be taxed more to pay for other people's healthcare, even if there are treatments that you disagree with, or, you know, basically they're incentivizing people to pursue unhealthy lifestyles by removing the moral hazard from them. Which maybe, you know, if they were on some kind of insurance, they'd have to pay more if they had an unhealthy lifestyle, and that would disincentivize them. And then, you know, statists, atheists who believe in the state, they want to force Christians to pay for abortions through the tax system. Meat eaters want vegans to pay for subsidies to dairy farmers. So if they're statists, so I think actually that's more the scarier thing is not that there's some a group of shadowy people with all the power that are orchestrating everything through these international organizations like the IMF, World Bank, and World Health Organization. It's the fact that it's people you like, it's your neighbors that are, they are the marginal state. By their influence of supporting the state's legitimacy, even if they disagree with the war in Iraq, even if they disagree with a lot of what the state does, by being in favor of the state, they legitimize whichever abuses it's guilty of. And that's a much harder problem to fix.
All right. Well, let me give my thoughts on this. This is one of the things that has bothered me about some of the conspiracy folks for a while. It's, in some cases, it becomes an excuse not to learn anything. Not to, you know, there's no point in learning economics because seven people are controlling everything. So it's an excuse not to know anything. At the same time, after what we've just endured with COVID, I can't imagine spending any time criticizing conspiracy people either, because how can you blame them?
Right.
After what we just lived through, how can you blame them? I wish it were a grand conspiracy, because then at least it would make sense. Because right now, we're in a situation where we've got somebody, Dr. Fauci, who is supposed to be respected by everybody, who's just been wrong as wrong can be over and over again. He's wrong about schools in the face of all the evidence all over the world. He's wrong about pre-existing immunity. He admits that he's been giving the wrong figures for the percentage necessary for herd immunity. He just admitted that recently, that he's been moving the goalposts ever so slightly alongside public opinion when he thinks public opinion is ready to hear the next stage of how their lives are going to be ruined. He's done that. So we've got all that stuff going on. We've got testing that obviously way overestimates the number of cases. So we're quarantining people for no reason and disrupting their lives. And then they want to do contact tracing, but no one's going to trace their contacts if they know their friends are going to also have to be quarantined for no reason, for no reason. I mean, we go on and on and on. We got all the charts in the world comparing one state, one country with another, showing that we've got California, Los Angeles County doing every possible restriction you could, and they've got hospitalizations going through the roof. Florida's doing much better with theme parks open, with tourists coming in, with the second oldest population in the country. California has one of the youngest. And right now, Florida's hospitalizations are much better than California's. We've got all this stuff, and yet we still have a situation where dissident voices are removed from social media. I actually had a video removed from YouTube. I've never had that happen to me before.
Wow.
And there was nothing in that. There was nothing factually untrue in that entire video. Nothing.
Basically.
It was simply that it disagreed with the CDC. That was what I was told by somebody from YouTube actually contacted me to explain themselves. The explanation, by the way, made it worse.
Yeah, that does make it worse.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to disagree with the CDC. The CDC disagreed with themselves.
With themselves. Oh, yeah, repeatedly. So anyway, yeah, after all this, how in the world can you reserve your anger for people who say nobody could be this stupid? It has to be done on purpose. Mm. How could you reserve your anger for those people as opposed to the people who are responsible for this fiasco? So, yeah, so I understand why people think this way. In fact, I know John McManus. He goes by Jack McManus. He was for a long time the president of the John Birch Society. He's a very, very nice guy. And I agree with him on most things. But on some things, I think he goes too far on the conspiracy angle of things. And the way he responded to me was, Tom, if it weren't a conspiracy, they would occasionally, just by accident, do the right thing.
Wow. That's
but you notice it never works out that way. How about that?
Well, I mean, one of the things that made me skeptical about the conspiracy is the fact that poverty worldwide has, you know, been destroyed over the last 30 years and things like that. And you go, well, if they're trying to keep people down on the global scale, they're doing a bad job of it.
Bad job of it, right.
And then my brother was like, yeah, but they're bringing them into the kind of wealth where they can actually, you know, start implementing the kind of controls that they have in Western society. I'm not saying that's true, but it was an interesting point he made. Maybe he made it better than I did. I love what you said about, I kind of wish it was a conspiracy because then it would be more comprehensible. But you have to be a little bit kooky in this world to believe the truth. I mean, so few people see the truth of even the state being an organ of coercion. And even that's admitted by the political philosophers. They just say it's an organ of coercion that's justified. Most people don't even see it as that. You know, all this, you know, we are the government and what have you. And there has been a trend. There's of writing articles. It's not a recent trend. When I say it's a trend, I don't mean a recent thing. I think they've always done it, of like psychologizing conspiracy theorists. They'll always have a article that says, why do people believe in conspiracy theories inside the strange world of the conspiracy theorists, and have some rationale for why people believe these things. But as Ludwig von Mises points out, psychologizing someone for holding a position doesn't debunk the position. So you first have to invalidate and demonstrate that the position is wrong. You can't just say, oh, well, they're just crazy conspiracy theorists, although that is usually how the word is used. And another point is, a person could be psychologically motivated to believe things and they could still be true. I mean, I talked in a previous podcast, you asked me what I thought would maybe create a propensity towards being open to libertarian ideas. And we talked about that a little bit. And obviously we're in the minority, but we believe our ideas are true. You could easily write an article, rather than saying, why do people believe in conspiracy theories, saying, inside the strange world of people who are gullible and believe whatever the CDC and the WHO says, you know, that's also a psychological phenomenon that's worth looking at.
Yes, it is. And again, I hesitate to do amateur psychologizing because I hate when it's done to me.
Yeah.
But surely there are people who just, for the life of them, they just can't imagine what it would be like to be outside the mainstream. They don't want to be weird. They don't want to be unusual. They don't want to be kooky. They don't want to be looked on as weirdos by their friends. I think that's a major factor in all this. Let me say a couple other things just before I forget. I think your point about the trouble with the idea of the global conspiracy is that in a way it's too optimistic. Mm. It's way too optimistic because it means that if we just unmasked this small cabal, well, then we would be back to the kind of society we want. I wish it were that simple. I wish that was all we were dealing with. I wish I could be that optimistic. But unfortunately, we're dealing with vested interests of all kinds that go all the way down to right down to your next door neighbor. So that's really what we're dealing with. But it also leads to people thinking that there were good presidents, you know, in U.S. history.
That's
that
right.
The bad guys just came down on them. I'll give two quick examples and I'll turn it back over to you. But for example, we get this, for some reason, there's this, the very same people who are willing to say, we are governed by sociopaths and it is an awful system that we have to endure and these are terrible people in charge, they still have to have that hero, you know, that hero president who was trying to do the will of the people.
That's
so there's
right.
the fake quotation from Woodrow Wilson about how I am a most unhappy man. I have unwittingly ruined my country, supposedly as he's reflecting on creating the Federal Reserve. He never said that. He was very proud of creating the Federal Reserve. But people need to believe stuff like this. Or they think that JFK was on the verge of abolishing the Fed. No such thing. There's no way somebody of JFK stature would have any interest in abolishing the Fed. And his thing about the silver certificates, G. Edward Griffin already explained that in The Creature from Jekyll Island. And G. Edward Griffin is as anti-Fed as you can get. And all the people who think JFK was trying to abolish the Fed, they all claim to be followers of G. Edward Griffin. They haven't read his book. He debunks that completely. But again, people have to have this. Now, by the way, JFK was probably less of a savage than some of the more recent presidents. I'm willing to concede that, but I am not willing to concede this idea that there was this one president who was really trying to do the right thing, and so all the bad guys ganged up. So I don't buy it. I think that's naive. And by the way, one other thing. Did you ever see the Mel Gibson movie Conspiracy Theory?
I didn't.
Okay. What's interesting is he believes in conspiracies. That's the idea. He's a taxi driver, and people who get in his cab have the misfortune of it's not like getting in Scott Horton's cab when he used to be a cab driver, and you would learn all about U.S. foreign policy. You're learning conspiracy theories, but they're conspiracy theories that literally nobody believes. I forget what they were, but every single one of them was totally stupid. Like David Icke doesn't believe him. Alex Jones doesn't believe him. Like they made them up for the movie.
Right.
And I wondered about why they did that. I mean, was it because they honestly are so out of it that they don't even know what other people think? Or was it really that they don't want to lend credence to semi-plausible theories by giving them a big audience? So instead, they just, you know, I don't know, it was like there are half whale, half man people living on the moon beaming lasers down at us. Like, I don't remember what exactly, but it was something along those lines. It was all ridiculous. No one believes any of these theories. They couldn't come up with one plausible theory that anyone has ever believed in an entire movie called Conspiracy Theory.
Right. And,
and by the way, I don't know what I'm asking of you by saying that. It just occurred to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of wacky theories out there, and not all of them are conspiracy theories. Like just the, you know, the origin of the state. People have this idea that people somehow came together and decided to institute a state because it would be good for them. But obviously, it's quite interesting to note that states arose at the same time as agriculture, and the reason why is because before you can grow stuff, no one can produce anything more than they can consume. So there's no point in owning a slave. And there's no point in having a state because you can't tax anyone. So you have like, I don't know what, it's not a conspiracy theory, but you have mythology that's widely accepted across the society about things like the origin of the state. And it's the first rulers, you know, were there by the divine right of kings, and that's a mythology. But now we just have this mythology that, What is the moral basis of democracy? You know, I hate to use the same cliches we've all heard before, but, you know, if 5-6 muggers jump out of you in an alley, is it democratic for them to mug you because they're the majority? Those people who are skeptics of conspiracies ever happening, they don't seem to be at all skeptical of these sort of mythologies. And I think the point about the muggers is a good one if they're trying to take your money off you, because for me the state is basically propped up by the individual self-interest of people who can, at the risk of reiterating the same point that I made before, like removing a few parasites at the top isn't going to make it so individuals don't still benefit from state benefit from there being a state which they can use to loot other people for whatever reason, and also to diffuse the negative effects of their poor decisions. I mean, one of the things, like, it reminds me of that quote by a conspiracy theorist, you know, who are you not allowed to criticize? Always look for who you're not allowed to criticize. You get scared talking about something like, say, oh, you can't say, oh, I think the welfare state has caused an epidemic of single motherhood, because that is that's like a holy cow. You're not allowed to criticize, or you might not even be criticizing single mothers. You might just be wanting to say, I just want as few people as possible to be in that position, because if you look at the statistics, people who are born in single parent homes have a raft of disadvantages. I think someone collected a list of over 50, you know, they're more likely to drop out of school, more likely to end up in jail, more likely to take drugs, more likely to have mental health issues, and so on and so on. You're not allowed to say that because, you know, you're a horrible, incompassionate person towards single mothers. But what about the kids? Of course, social pathology is the health of the state. The more social issues there are, the more pretext there is for having a state. So what is the incentive? If you just see things as, you don't need to believe in a conspiracy to think that organizations will tend to go in the way that they're incentivized to go. You know, things tend to blow in the same direction as the wind's blowing. So when you've got an organization who's the whole pretext of the state existing is, well, who's going to do something about this problem, that problem, or the other problem if we don't have government? What incentive does the state have to create permanent fixes for that problem when that basically means its role will be diminished and all of those who draw their income from it fulfilling that role will be out of a job?
Right. Hey, everybody, let's take a quick minute to improve your life by reminding you about my old friend John Bush, whom I've known since the first Ron Paul presidential campaign. He's been a guest on the Tom Woods Show several times. We did a whole episode on Kratom, which is a natural remedy that's helped a lot of people with chronic pain, stress and anxiety, energy and focus, even overcoming addiction. You can hear the full interview I did with John on this at tomwoods.com/Kratom. Well, apparently, after that interview, he had a pretty big surge in sales from listeners. We've had a lot of people reporting they've had profound results with it. People saying they feel better than they've felt in years. I just got an email from somebody saying he used to drink every single night just to be able to get to sleep. He doesn't have to do that anymore now that he's using Kratom instead. And it can have great results like this for you too, but you won't know until you try it. And John's making it really easy to do that because he's giving you some for free. He put together an offer you can find, along with our interview, over at tomwoods.com/Kratom. All you have to do is pay for shipping, and he'll send you an ounce to try free of charge. So if you want to see what all the fuss is about, head on over to tomwoods.com/Kratom, listen to the interview, and take advantage of his free offer. That's tomwoods.com/Kratom, K-R-A-T-O-M. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't wealthy, influential people who exercise a lot of influence and may exercise behind-the-scenes influence or put pressure on people or gather together and discuss what they would like to see happen in the world. You know, I'm sure that does happen. And I'm sure there are plenty of sinister people out there. But I sometimes think, like, there's a lot of emphasis placed on the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States. And look at all these people are in the Council on Foreign Relations. Like, that's a place where they all get together to conspire. But I think that has it reversed. It's that the sort of people who are invited to join the Council on Foreign Relations are the sort of people who already think a certain way.
Right.
And so, you know, it's not that they don't have to get together and conspire. They're already all the same person.
Right.
You know, I think that's the wrong emphasis. I would rather just say these people have extremely destructive ideas and they may as well all be clones of each other, but it's mere happenstance that they belong to the Council on Foreign Relations. That's an afterthought. If there were no Council on Foreign Relations tomorrow, zip would be improved in U.S. foreign policy. Nothing.
Yeah. And as you say, people like behind the scenes using their influence, whether it be, you know, openly through lobbying or through, if I scratch my back, you'll scratch yours. That's all explained by economic incentives as well. I guess those who are in favor of the conspiracy can say, oh, I heard, you know, someone like David Icke would say, let's take the Thatcher-Reagan era. They didn't need to install someone who's of the same views, neoliberal as they're called today, as they wanted to implement. They just needed to find someone like Margaret Thatcher and manipulate her into power because they knew what they were going to do. But the thing is, I think you can only do these things to the extent that you have sort of marginal support among the people. And then the next thing is to say, well, what about the media? Who controls the media? Who gets to choose who has a license to broadcast and choose what information people are exposed to? I mean, the scary stuff on... I used to think, you know, if we had Russia Today, for example, during the run-up to the Iraq war, it's quite a long time ago I thought this, we wouldn't have been able to have an Iraq war because at that time, you didn't have YouTube, you know. It was so, those who went out of their way to find out good information would have known that Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction, but we had no access to the information, at least not in the mainstream media. A lot of people still only watch the news, only watch the television. It's hard to believe. Actually, I think that's, I was listening to the radio and hearing the way, which I almost never do, hearing the way things were being reported regarding COVID, and they've got this scary intense music, you know, like dun 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 in the background constantly. And it suddenly made something click for me, the way that some of my Facebook contacts are in favor of the lockdowns. It's like, if you really are tuning into the mainstream media every day, you're not just getting a different analysis of facts presented to you. It's working psychologically with the, you know, with the intensity of the music and the austere tone that they report everything in. And they're resonating people into a certain kind of emotion and a certain kind of state in which they view the world through the intensity of the reporting, not necessarily just the content of what's being said. And I was speaking about this recently, really, actually just listening to that report demystified things for me a little bit as to why people might be so open to believing the mainstream narrative on COVID. It's not just the content of the reporting. I used to wonder if I was indoctrinating myself as well by just listening to podcasts, but I realized there's a really big difference between listening to a podcast where you're just hearing people talk and exchange information and the whole kind of dread atmosphere they create in the media. I heard it once reported that whenever they make one of these car chases where they're trying to track down a felon on the news, the police are and they broadcast it. Usually, two or three more people will go out and copy it because they think, oh, maybe I'll get some notoriety as well. I'll be on the news. And that the media companies were told this repeatedly: stop doing it. You're creating more crime. You're creating more shootings. You're creating more murder by showing these car chases, these criminal car chases on TV. And they wouldn't stop doing it because that's how they attract ratings. So there's my kind of hodgepodge of thoughts about media influence.
Yeah, I just remember teaching in the old days, and I used to get a handful of students who would come to my office who were the smarter ones, who had figured out what my views were in one way or another. And they would come to me and say, geez, wow, the world is completely different from how I thought it was. What can we do? So obviously it is the case that if more people had an unbiased exposure to our views, you know, where they weren't presented to them in caricature or just ignored, there would be more people who think the way we do. So there is no question about that. I just don't think it's as many more as I used to think.
Right.
And as this COVID thing has really solidified that.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed to me that initially, I was very wrong about the virus. And in fact, I want to be honest with people. I mean, I was even saying at the very, very beginning that if we have to stay home for a little while, then my goal is not going to be the world's greatest libertarian, but to stay alive. Mm. I mean, that was the way I looked at it. And okay, I shouldn't have done that. I'm not infallible. I'm sorry. I was wrong about that. It was dead wrong. But at the same time that I was saying that, I was scouring the internet trying to find some good news. Is there any reason for hope here? And early on, there wasn't a whole lot. But then as time went on, there was more and more. And we started to learn about the real figures and the age stratified aspect, and we saw that it isn't really exponential in the literal sense. The growth is not exponential, and the curves do bend eventually, and almost no matter what you do. And so, you know, there were reasons for hope, and yet the panickers, all the while, they were not interested in anything involving hope. They would dismiss it. They would denounce it. They would criticize you. They wanted it to be as negative as possible.
Yeah.
And now it's like, now that the vaccine is here and a bunch of vaccines, they're saying, yeah, well, you're still going to have to, you still can't have, you know, some of you expecting normal life back in 2021. Well, that's not going to happen. It's like they are reveling in it. And that's when I realized something's abnormal about these people. That's not normal. It's not human not to be searching for signs of hope the way I was. It's not normal.
Yeah.
So I think there are people who, for whatever reason, they like control, they like mainstream narratives, they like herd mentality. I don't know.
Yeah, it's totally mystifying. And I've seen that phenomenon as well. I'm like, wow, it's like these people want it. They actually want it to be as bad as possible. And I don't know if they're just like enjoying a live action role play in their favorite apocalyptic movie or apocalyptic Netflix show. Oh yeah, I get to actually live my favorite show out for real. I'm living in the post-apocalypse virus end times. Or another thing I think of as a psychologist is whenever you have an emotional state already, your mind looks for evidence to justify that it's true. So you get into a situation where, I don't know, something's triggered from the past and you feel under threat. You start looking around the environment for threats. And if you can't find any, then you might start, you know, making them up. Your mind might start making them up. It's almost like these people had, some people might have a feeling like and this actually goes back to psychologizing the conspiracy theorists as well. It's like, maybe you already have a feeling that there's something suspicious, you know, something's not quite right. And the conspiracy theories can back up that feeling that you already have and makes you feel like you've got a reason to feel the way that you already feel. Like, kind of like that with the COVID stuff. Like, maybe people just felt like the world was on the verge of disaster already anyway. And the narrative gives them a justification to feel the anxiety that they already felt anyway.
Well, I bet there are people who are concerned about this or that global institution. And look, I don't like the UN either, but I don't think world government is that's not what I'm worried about. Mm. I think generally the US government would wind up being the world government more than the UN would. And I also think it's ridiculous to think that China is going to hand over its monetary sovereignty to a single world central bank. I just don't see that happening. I mean, there are things that we should be worried about, but I don't think those sorts of things are among them. But at the same time, I understand where people who look at the world this way are coming from, and I don't want them to think that I dismiss them altogether. I just think the emphasis is misplaced. I think in some cases, some of the theorizing is not backed up by as much hard and fast evidence as I would want in order to believe something like that. But also, even if we fixed all that, the problem is we have met the enemy and he is us.
Yes. Yes. So the question always remains, what's the way forward?
Well, that is the question, and that's why we have the Tom Wood Show.
Right.
Every day to try to stumble toward the answer to that question. Now, we're going to wrap up today with not really having resolved much, but certainly having talked out something very important. This is the end of Anthony Samaroff Week. What would be the one link, if people went to one link to follow you now, what would it be?
Yeah, check out the Scottish Liberty podcast on iTunes or your regular podcast listen. If you want some suggestions of what some of my favorite episodes are, you can always add me on Facebook, Anthony Samaroff. People do, and I like talking to people and meeting people in the movement. So if you want to have a little chat about anything you've heard this week, I'd be interested in your thoughts as well.
Excellent. All right. I'll have some Anthony Samaroff links, of course, on the show notes page. And thank you for doing this. It was great fun.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's a great honor to be part of the elite few who have had a whole week of Tom Wood's show's episodes dedicated to them. I look forward to speaking to you again sometime in the future.
Thanks again, Anthony. All right, everybody. Anthony Samaroff week has come to an end. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you are continuing to enjoy the Tom Woods Show. And if so, you will very much enjoy being a member of the Tom Woods Show elite, because you're not going to find a brighter, more congenial, and informative group of people anywhere in the world. And that's exactly what you need to maintain your sanity during the ongoing lunacy all around you. So check it out at supportinglisteners.com, and I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.